one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
The only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite,
the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office.
White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS EM 890.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We've got two for you this weekend. White Sox Weekly this afternoon, this morning, I should say. No, I guess it is afternoon. We've made it past the noon mark. Congratulations, everybody. You're now officially in Saturday afternoon. Tomorrow, though, we'll be on in the morning. We'll start it up at 11 o'clock, get you an hour and a half of White Sox Weekly. There are plenty of headlines that the White Sox have made over the last handful of days, changing the roster around. A terrific first handful of draft picks for Nick Hostetler and the boys with the White Sox as they've gone through the MLB draft. It continues today, and we'll talk with Nick Hostetler again tomorrow. A double dip of Hostetler as well. Kind of wrap up the back end of draft picks with him tomorrow morning and into the afternoon. Today, you'll hear a little bit from him. He talked with reporters just after the first three selections in the top 50 the White Sox had. You've probably heard the names by now, if not the thumbnails on each guy. So we'll bring you just a little bit of tape from White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler a little bit later on in the program. Zach Collins, Zach Birdie, and Alec Hansen, the first three selections for the White Sox in this 2016 draft. And by many accounts, people, third parties and independent, you know, kind of draft nicks, they've rated the White Sox first three picks pretty high and are excited about a lot of the players that they've taken throughout. So a good start to this MLB draft for sure, and we'll wrap things up a little bit as well. White Sox have won two straight, three in a row, and they call it a winning streak. White Sox at the Royals again this afternoon out here at U.S. Cellular Field. It's a tale of two ball clubs that are going in fairly different directions, or at least on the White Sox side, we hope that they're moving in a different direction than the Royals, and that would be up to the Royals down, having lost eight in a row, and the White Sox can send them to a ninth straight loss this afternoon. It's Jose Quintana and Danny Duffy, the starters today out here at U.S. Cellular Field. White Sox were able to put up some offense behind Chris Sale despite his not having a quality start. Gave up five. Three home runs for Chris Sale and a lot of strange and weird stats going along with that. It was and is again hot out here at the ballpark. And you know what happens at U.S. Cellular Field when it gets warm and a little breezy, maybe even a little humid, the ball absolutely jumps off the bat out here. And that's what we saw last night. Seven different home runs between these two teams. Four for the White Sox, two for Alex Avila. He hasn't gone yard since 2015 before last night. In fact, the last home run he hit before last night was against Eric Johnson and the White Sox when Alex was a Detroit Tiger. Two last night, he kind of leaned on Ian Kennedy. And, you know, the conditions were perfect for a handful of long balls last night. Ian Kennedy's a guy who will give up a home run here and there, and more often than that, actually. And it was a warm, humid, and kind of a small ballpark feel for U.S. Cellular Field last night. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We've got you for a half hour today up until the start of the pregame show, and then we'll do an hour and a half tomorrow morning into the afternoon, start at 11 o'clock. But we can get your thoughts on this ball club and on the spate of recent moves that the White Sox have made here. Of course, there's almost too many to list, and I may forget one or two here. But in the last 4 days, the White Sox have designated for assignment two starters on this roster. Matt Latos, who was a starter in this rotation, has been designated for assignment. Jimmy Rollins was designated as well. Tim Anderson has been called up from AAA Charlotte. He acquitted himself very well last night in his Major League debut, a double down the left field line in his first at-bat, a single in his second, and worked a good count, grounding out to second base in the middle of that, 2-for-3 last night. Justin Morneau was signed to the ball club, and while he's not available for them right now and on the disabled list as he recovers from an elbow surgery, off-season elbow surgery, it sounds as though the White Sox and Morneau himself are pretty excited about him getting ready to go by little after the All-Star break. All-Star game's on the 12th of July this year. And the 15th is when the White Sox get back to baseball after that break. So hopefully right in that middle of July time frame is when the left-hander and former MVP can join this White Sox roster. There's still some baseball left in him. The White Sox are confident of that. And if you've seen the numbers for Morneau over the last 2 years, you can definitely see where there's some production left for the first baseman. Also, Austin Jackson out about 6 weeks. I suppose that's the worst news the White Sox have had to hand out with of course, Daniel Webb and Jake Petrischka, two bullpen arms being done for the season. Webb with Tommy John surgery. Petrischka, I don't know if there's a name for the surgery, a fancy name for the surgery. If there is, a doctor would know it, and I certainly don't. But Petrischka had been dealing with a little bit of a hip problem. Apparently there is some sort of labrum in your hip, and that was an issue for Jake. He had to get that fixed up yesterday, and he's likely done for the year as well. So plenty of things going on with this ball club. Some ups, some downs, as every ball club has throughout the course of a season. Injuries are never fun for anybody, but every single ball club has to deal with them. And these two teams here at U.S. Cellular Field this afternoon are all going through them. Remember, the Royals, in their first series against the White Sox, lost both Mike Moustakas ended up losing Mike Moustakas and Alex Gordon for an extended period of time. Gordon out for probably another 3 weeks or so, and Moustakas is going to miss the rest of the season with a torn ACL, so everybody's going through it. Mentioned that we want to get to some of the comments the White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler had after the first round, the first round of picks that the White Sox had, three in the top 50, a compensatory pick for losing Jeff Samardzija in the offseason. Their second round pick, which turned out being number 49, and their 10th overall pick, the first pick they had in the draft. Really solid names and really solid reviews of the White Sox work. We figure we listen to Nick Hostetler on those first three picks today before we talk to him again tomorrow and get kind of the summation of the draft, as there's still ball players getting picked today. We'll tell you this before we do that. A White Sox group outing is the perfect way to entertain clients, promote teamwork, or boost morale. Companies, schools, churches, and sports teams can all enjoy special group benefits when they reserve 20 or more seats. The larger your group, the larger your discount. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/group. All right, we've mentioned it a couple of times. Nick Hostetler is the brand new White Sox scouting director for the draft this year, and has hit on a couple of his targets. He spoke with reporters after the first three picks 2 days ago about what he got, what the White Sox got, and how pleased they were to find those three gentlemen ready and willing to get drafted into the big leagues for the White Sox. Here it is, scouting director Nick Hostetler.
I couldn't tell you how ecstatic our room is right now. I think we took three impact players, starting it with Zach, impact bat, come back with the other Zach, and Birdie, and then finishing off with Alec Hansen from Oklahoma, who was at one point projected to be 1-1 about a year ago this time. So I can't be happier with the way day one went.
Is Callen's a catcher?
He's a catcher.
You think he's going to be?
No question in my mind, he's going to be a catcher. There's we evaluate him as a catcher. We feel that he's a middle of the order impact bat, solid average catch and throw guy. We think that, I mean, there's no question in anybody in that room that he can't catch.
Best approach in the country.
It's pretty good. Yeah, he's great plate discipline, understands the strike zone as well as anybody, more walks than strikeouts, big raw power. This is something we've been looking for in our organization for a long time. We think we found it today.
Not to put any pressure on the kid when he just got drafted, but is Birdie somewhat close?
He's advanced, would be the word I would use. I think our approach this year is to keep him as a reliever, and then once we get to know the young man and get to know what his makeup and what he's made of and what he's capable of, we'll reevaluate that probably after the season. He's a little bit more advanced because he's only got to throw one inning at a time. The stuff is that good.
How much did the slider kind of change the consistency of it, change his path?
Yeah, the slider is terrific, but I think the big thing for him and his development is changeup. His changeup is devastating to lefties. There's one of our guys in our room called it a plus fastball. It's 92 mile an hour changeup with big time sink. So this guy's got three plus pitches. It's impact. It's lights out stuff. Alec was, coming in, I would say this time last year, he was probably projected to be 1-1 in the country. big-time power fastball. It's 97 to 100. I actually saw him on Mother's Day, which my wife probably wasn't too excited about me being there. It's four-plus pitches when he's on. There's some mechanical things that we feel we can fix. The guys in the room, Don Cooper, looked at some video for us and feels that there's some small mechanical adjustments, and as soon as we make him, he's going to take off. So we're excited about that.
And Collins, you said, was the guy you were talking about yesterday.
He was the guy. Yeah, I can say it now. Zach was the guy, and anybody in that room will vouch for that. He was the best guy. Yeah, he was number one on our list since the first week of April. We kind of highlighted him, circled him, and I ran everybody in under the sun to see him. So we were pretty happy. And to Rick's credit, he struck out three times when Rick saw him. So Rick trusts the scouts.
Here's a hypothetical. If Ray and Collins were available, how tough would that pick it
Tough. Be? Tough, but we were very happy with the guy player we got. We're happy for Corey, excited for him. It was kind of cool because when Corey went in the room, we all clapped, and it's a pretty cool moment for the kids. We all know him personally, but we're pretty happy with Zach.
With the way your board played out, you were hoping the three came from that group.
All three did, and we were the last nine picks. We were starting to sweat out that side of it started to shrink a little bit, but it held true, and we got the guy we wanted.
That's White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler talking about the first three picks the White Sox had in this Major League draft. Zach Collins, Zach Birdie, Alec Hansen. I've watched tape just a little bit, and I don't profess to be a scout by any stretch, but I know a couple things you're looking at. This Zach Birdie kid looks absolutely wonderful. Throwing just flame and a good changeup, too, as you heard Hostetler talk about. And kind of the general consensus of people who follow the draft and understand, you know, prospect, both evaluation and takeoff, the, you know, potential. A lot of people think that Birdie could make an impact in the major leagues this year. Obviously, you don't want to put too much on a kid's plate at this point in time. A lot of baseball left in the major league season for Birdie to kind of work through some minor league stuff and, you know, get into the hands of this White Sox coaching staff as well. But keep an eye out for Zach Birdie. It's possible that that's a guy that could rise through the system. The White Sox have done that with a number of arms. Carlos Rodon, Chris Sale, just to name a few, into the major league ranks fairly quickly after being drafted into the organization. We'll take a quick break here. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. You want to get involved with the program, you certainly can. On the other side, Chris Sale talked about his start last night and a couple other things surrounding this White Sox ball club, including the debut of one Tim Anderson at short. Tim's going to be out there again. I feel like, and you'll hear it in the pregame show a little bit later as we get up to White Sox and Royals this afternoon, but I think someone's going to have to make a T-shirt eventually. The quote that's been going around by both Robin and Rick, it just keeps on coming up. Timmy's going to play. Timmy's here to play. Put that on a T-shirt because I think you're going to see him out at shortstop quite a bit throughout the course of this 2016 season. 312-591-8900. You're listening to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight on WLS AM 890.
The White Sox versus Royals. First pitch at 1:10.
On your home for White Sox baseball. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We're talking White Sox baseball here with you this afternoon, taking you up until the pregame show begins. We got the Sox and Royals out here at the ballpark. And, you know, I think a lot of White Sox fans were, and rightfully so, when the sweep in Kansas City came around, things got so centered on what this ball club needed to do to fix itself, on how it needed to turn around and get back to playing the way they'd played in the first 5 weeks of the season. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with taking an internal look at the ball club, fixing your own problems, kind of, you know, taking care of your own before you look in and around. DJ talks about this a lot. Darren Jackson on the broadcast talked about it a lot. When the White Sox were up, you know, I'd ask him, you know, casually where, you know, what do you think about a couple other teams in this division, that kind of thing. And the old ball player in him and just that mindset is, I don't care. We're on top. We'll think about other ball clubs when we got to think about other ball clubs. Well, standings have shifted some, and now you start to look back around the rest of this AL Central and see what it takes to compete and where other ball clubs are at. I think that's just a kind of a natural course of the season, and DJ was right with where his mindset took him, obviously. So now you start to look around at other ball clubs a little bit. This Royals squad came off a sweep of the White Sox and then took I want to make sure I have this right. And then took three in a row from the Tampa Bay Rays. Yep, 1, 2, 3 in a row from the Rays. And then promptly, well, I shouldn't say promptly because 8 days is a long stretch of time, but then lost 8 in a row, culminating in last night's loss, 7-5, to these White Sox. A lot of home runs last night, 7 of them between two ball clubs. And Chris Sale gave up 3 of them. Now, what's interesting there is Chris Sale has only twice in his career given up home runs to the same batter more than once in a ball game. Last night against Eric Hosmer of the Kansas City Royals, who is, I think it's probably worth saying, I know it's not maybe a fun opinion to have, especially when you're rooting for the White Sox, but Eric Hosmer is turning into quite a fine ball player. Moustakas and Hosmer on either corner had, you know, they were kind of those super prospects for the Royals and the future of the organization for quite some time, and struggled a little bit to find some traction. And it's too bad, I suppose, from the Royals' point of view and for Moustakas about the injury that's going to keep him out this season. But Eric Hosmer just keeps on taking off, and 2 home runs last night. He joins Ryan Rayburn as the only other ball player in his career to take Chris Sale deep more than once in a game. In fact, it was the first time that he's allowed home runs to a left-handed hitter since 2012 for Chris Sale. Just kind of one of those nights that, admittedly, and I think he says it too, and we'll listen to it in just a second here in his comments after last night's start. Admittedly, the first one he gave up to Hosmer, the second one was, it wasn't a great breaking ball, and Hosmer got it. The first one was a fastball on the outer half that he went out and tapped. So in a night where the ball was going to jump a little bit. Credit to the Royals offense, credit to Hosmer, but also to Chris Sale and the White Sox defense. All 3 home runs that Sale gave up were solo shots. And obviously in a 7-5 ball game, in a game where the ball is absolutely jumping, that's, if you're going to give up home runs, if you know that that's going to be the kind of night you're having, do it when nobody's on base. White Sox got a double play to erase a base runner before Hosmer's first home run, and his second was a leadoff shot. So they're not harmless per se, but they did as the least amount of harm that you could handle on a night like that. Chris Sale spoke after his start, not exactly what he wanted personally, but I think you'll hear it in some of the comments here. And he talks about Tim Anderson making his debut as well. He doesn't really care about his own performance, about his own results, so long as it's enough to get this White Sox ball club a win. That's just the kind of guy Chris is. Take a listen to Chris,
you know,
after the ball game last night.
Put 7 up. You want to do your best to get those guys a win. You know, didn't work out for myself tonight, but hey, we're in here listening to some music and having a good time, so we're in.
And what did you think of Tim Anderson's performance there first game?
It's great. You know, to be able to come in here, you know, and you know, just be able to take a deep breath and do what he did. I mean, he had, you know, great at bats the whole night. You know, looked like he's been here forever. So, you know, hats off to him, and you know, I think you're going to be asking me that question quite a bit throughout the year, so we're happy to have him.
Do you think the ball is going to be flying tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it just comes with the territory, you know, with this field in the summer and stuff like that. You got to play, though. You know, you got to take that into consideration, and, you know, they still count the same, so just got to be a little bit better than that. But like I said, I mean, you just got to appreciate days like today for, you know, when the flip side happens. So like I said, we won, so we're good.
Any sort of a relief here with number 10 now?
No, I mean, the relief to get a win today, yeah. I mean, especially after how the game played out and all that, especially the team across the way. They're tough. You know, they're grinders. They're not going to give it to you, and they never give in. And, you know, I think that's more important, getting the win today, starting the series off right, and, you know, hopefully just grind out a couple more games and get some wins.
Chris, talking about Tim Anderson again, it's always nice to have a veteran clubhouse, of course, but is it sometimes nice to have some youth just thrown in periodically, especially talented youth?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think we have a good mix in here, you know, with guys that have been around and some new guys coming in with, like you said, a lot of talent. So, you know, we like the way this is shaping up, and like I said, just got to keep grinding and keep working.
Yeah, having a little trouble with the audio there on the backside. Chris is being attacked by some sort of buzzing thing. I think my favorite answer in that whole deal is when he was asked if there's personal relief after getting win number 10. It's almost like Chris forgot that that was win number 10 for him. It doesn't matter to him. He's all about team wins. Sox fans, join us as the White Sox take on the Toronto Blue Jays Saturday, June 25th at 1:10. The first 20,000 fans will receive a White Sox beach towel presented by Shark Week. That's starting June 26th on Discovery. Purchase your tickets today by visiting WhiteSox.com. Calling 866-SOX-GAME. That does it for this edition of White Sox Weekly. Tomorrow we'll be on for an hour and a half. We'll talk again with scouting director Nick Hosteller about the entirety of the draft. It'll be wrapped up by then. Stay with us because the pregame show starts in just a couple of minutes. Sox and Royals are out here at U.S. Cellular Field. That's coming up next here on WLS AM 890.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us all that once was good.
And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out, is the Church of Baseball.
Now, White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS. AM 890.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. Got you for the next hour and a half as we lead up to the pregame show for the White Sox and Royals. Game 3 out here at U.S. Cellular Field. It's a nice day out here at the ballpark. It had been warm, very warm the last 2 days out here, and the ball jumped off the bat. 10 home runs in the last 2 days for these two clubs. Unfortunately for the White Sox, all three of those home runs yesterday came off the bats of Kansas City Royals. Day before that, though, White Sox out-homered the Royals 4-3, so that's something for you. This series is split so far, at least this one here at U.S. Cellular Field, 1-1. Jose Quintana playing tough luck loser yesterday as he gave up 3 solo shots. The Royals tagged on 1 against Tyler Danish in the eighth, to get themselves to the 4-0 lead. White Sox got 1 in the ninth. A 7-5 win and a 4-1 loss so far. These two ball clubs hopefully going in different directions, too. The Royals have lost, 8 of their last 9. The White Sox, hopefully with a series win this afternoon, which would obviously mean a win in this ballgame today, would go back to a game over 500. They're sitting there at 31-31, 3.5 games out of the lead in the AL Central, which is really, technically speaking, it's right there. And the White Sox have made plenty of moves to put themselves in a position they think to succeed in this AL Central. We've seen that in a flurry the last handful of days here. We want to talk about some of those moves, some of the improvements on this ball club in the last handful of days with you. Here's the schedule of events for this morning and into the afternoon. We'll talk with White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler. He's been a busy man and a visible one, too, over the last handful of days as the White Sox and Major League Baseball have concluded their amateur draft. White Sox taking a number of players and really with 3 picks on the first day of the draft, 3 picks in the top 50, top 49 technically, 3 picks in those top 49, really highly rated numbers by people who are much smarter than I am and who evaluate the MLB draft and prospects and all that kind of jazz. Zach Collins, Zach Birdie, and Alec Hansen, the 3 names taken, and all sorts of rave reviews about those 3 gentlemen and their prospects as Major League ballplayers for the White Sox, too. Collins, who's a catcher out of the University of Miami and is playing still, went ahead and hit 2 home runs in the 2 games after being drafted by the White Sox, so he seemed excited at his prospects of playing Major League Baseball. Zach Birdie still throws about 100 miles an hour and maybe even harder. Alec Hansen might have been the number 1 overall draft pick had it taken place maybe a calendar year ago or right after last year's draft, I suppose, is a better way to put that. So really, really solid talent at the top there, and the White Sox have filled out a farm system that has a couple of names that have been promoted to the big leagues here in the last few days. Obviously, you know, with the draft, there's an influx of talent to the system. We'll talk with Nick Hostetler right after the 11:30 news to get his take on the rest of the draft. We talked a lot yesterday about the top three guys, and even heard from him a little bit as well. But this draft goes deep. It's 40 rounds and tons of players taken, some with familiar names too. So we'll talk with Nick Hostetler about that. Also want to talk with you, 312-591-8900. The phone number again, 312-591-8900 here on White Sox Weekly. You're headed into the ballpark this afternoon to see the White Sox take on the Royals. There have been plenty of roster moves, of additions and subtractions on this 25-man roster over the last handful of days. We're going to step through kind of one by one each move and see, you know, why and where and how you feel about where this White Sox team is moving on and how it's positioning itself to compete in this AL Central, to continue to compete in this AL Central, as it's all really just bunched up there in the standings. While the Kansas City Royals are right there at 31-31, record-wise, a half game ahead of the White Sox. They've played one fewer game and only lost 30. The Cleveland Indians are beginning to take off a little bit, and still, you know, having won as many in a row as they've won, the Cleveland Indians have not taken off. Won 7 of their last 10, have the Indians. Still, only 3.5 games separate the White Sox from Cleveland, with Sox in fourth place. And really, it's just the Minnesota Twins at the back end of this thing at 18-43. Plenty of baseball left to play, and I would imagine plenty of moves left to be made, or potentially left to be made for these White Sox as they continue to search for ways to improve the roster. We'll start with a couple of roster moves when we come back from the break here, but I should let you know, as we kind of start our breakdown, I suppose, of the flurry of moves the last handful of days, you can enjoy all the benefits of being a White Sox season ticket holder by purchasing a prorated full-season ticket package. To purchase a season ticket package, visit WhiteSox.com or call 312-674-1000 today. That number again, 312-674-1000 to purchase season ticket packages. White Sox have made some moves. The rotation is different, but the good news is, at least for today, Carlos Rodon, healthy, did skip his last start with a little bit of a neck issue. That pain kind of went into the bicep a little bit as well. And he's going to make his start against Yordano Ventura. Ventura, for his side of the equation here, has made things interesting the last handful of days. He's a guy who's got a little bit of a reputation as a firebrand, I suppose. He plunked Manny Machado in his last start. I believe that was back on Tuesday of this past week. And he was suspended 9 games, Ventura was. He's appealing that suspension and is thus eligible to make the start for the Royals this afternoon. It'll be the third time this season that it's been Rodon Ventura when the White Sox have matched up with the Royals. Those two teams have split those games. Rodon winning the White Sox, rather, winning the first one, and the Royals winning the second. Neither pitcher, if I recall correctly, neither pitcher factored into the decision there. Rodon's had a good run at home here at U.S. Cellular Field. We hope that continues this afternoon as we're getting you prepped for the White Sox and Royals Game 3 here at U.S. Cellular Field. You've got White Sox Weekly, though. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. We come back after the break. We'll kind of start going through some of the moves, some of the many moves that have been made on this White Sox roster here in the last handful of days. See what you think about them. 312-591-8900. Also, White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler scheduled to stop by after the 11:30 news. I'm Connor McKnight. We got you until 12:30 here on WLS AM 890.
Passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox play here. WLS AM 890.
You got White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. Thanks for spending your morning and afternoon with us here on the radio, talking a little White Sox baseball. Sox and Royals getting set for Game 3 of the third meeting between these two ball clubs. Sox can take the series with a win. We are split at 1-1. The lineup is out. Adam Eaton is going to be in center field. He's going to be there for quite some time, I would imagine, as Austin Jackson is out with the tear in his knee. He's going to need surgery. That's not been scheduled yet. Next week at some point was the latest. That's what Rick Hahn told us the other day as the news kind of trickled out that Austin Jackson was going to miss I suppose you can call that an extended period of time, about 6 weeks or so. So Eaton Mins, center fielder, bats leadoff. Jose Abreu at first base. He'll bat two. Melky Cabrera is going to get the DH work today as he gets off of his feet just a little bit in left field. Good to keep him rested and well. Todd Frazier batting four and hitting batting four and playing third base. Brett Laurie in the five spot and playing second base. Alex Avila catching six. Avi Garcia is going to man right field and hit seven. Eight is J.B. Shuck in left, and nine is Tim Anderson at short with Carlos Rodon on the hill today. Wanted to start with the roster moves that have been made on this ball club, for this ball club, over the last handful of days. We'll go back as far as, you know, this the James Shields trade, I think, which also kind of coincided with, well, I suppose a number of moves as well. The first domino, I think, in the last handful of days that have kind of reshaped a significant portion of this White Sox lineup and starting rotation, too. 312-591-8900, you want to discuss it with us here on White Sox Weekly. You can also get to us on the text line. 68683 is the way to text us. If you do text us, you do have to put WLSAM in the text, otherwise we can't see it. And then, you can do the Twitter thing. At C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. You tweeted us, and we get your thoughts here on the show. Same rule applies for the post-game show after the ballgame. Carlos Rodon, healthy and ready to roll here, and he is part of this rotation that's been reshaped some in the last handful of days, going back to the James Shields trade of a few days ago. You make this move, and unfortunately for James and the White Sox, the debut was a bad one. There's really no way to butter that thing up. It was not good. He admitted as such. The long ball was there for him. And while James at 34 isn't necessarily the guy that made starts in the playoffs against the White Sox back in 2008, he certainly is a capable and quality major league pitcher that's had two bad outings. So I think when you look at what that addition was and where the benefits will pay off for the White Sox down the line in the season is that James has one very easily identifiable skill that is absolutely still there for him. That is, and I'm not saying he only has the one skill. I'm saying the one that sticks out maybe more than anything else at this point is that he eats innings. He gets deep into ball games. He has routinely pitched into the sixth this season and gotten himself into the seventh as well. Obviously, the last two starts being short ones and being bad ones, you look at those with a raised eyebrow and expect that a guy with a track record like he's got puts those woes behind him and is able to get back to the career norms the way he's always pitched, and that is getting deep into ball games. But as good as this White Sox club was in the first month of the season, going 23-10, there were a couple of issues in that good starts that you got from Matt Latos, starts that you were getting from John Danks, even a handful of starts that you got from Carlos Rodon, who, you know, kind of rode a roller coaster in the first 6-7 weeks of the season, weren't as long as they could have been. And unfortunately, because those guys were at that point 3, 4, and 5 in the rotation, in consecutive days, you were having to go to that bullpen. Robin Ventura was having to go to the bullpen on a fairly regular basis. You look back at the beginning of that season and how good Jose Quintana and Chris Sale were off the bat, just rolling off quality starts and getting deep into ball games. Sale obviously winning his first 9 in a row and throwing 3 complete ball games in that stretch. Jose Quintana getting deep into games as well. You wonder to think how that bullpen or how this club would look if they hadn't gotten off to the start they'd gotten to, if even they just hadn't been able to go as long as they were able to go. Those two gentlemen really saved this club's bacon on a number of different nights, whether that was coming off of extra inning games in Texas or rain delay in Arlington or maybe just a couple of short outings where you had to go into the bullpen and pitch for matchups, too. I remember early on in the season against a Rangers series here, you know, where you had the first triple play of the year for the White Sox, that crazy one, Robin was going matchup out of the bullpen to make sure that he had, because the White Sox were playing close games, very close games at that point, and you wanted to go out and win it. You wanted to press the gas pedal on a good start, and I don't blame him for that at all. But because of those myriad things, myriad ways that the bullpen has been used over the first month, 6 weeks of the season, maybe you started to see performance drop kind of all across the board. And while I don't know that I've ever quite seen a reversal the way that bullpen had performance-wise go from the first 6 weeks to the next three or four, it's quite remarkable. Things seem to have stabilized some as of late. You've had pretty good performances out of the pen from guys like Nate Jones, from guys like David Robertson. Putnam has been very good of late, and Jan Jennings, to a point, has been good too, along with Zach Duke. I mean, you can kind of go through these, through some of those gentlemen out in the bullpen and point to quality outings from all of them. And one guy, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, and maybe we talk about him with Nick Hostetler just after the 11:30 news, is he's a guy who's, you know, in the player development and scouting realm for the White Sox. Matt Perk has been interesting to watch. And I know he had one outing where, because of where the bullpen was, and this is just unfortunate for, I guess really only for Perk's numbers and maybe his confidence some, although he seems to have bounced back from it fairly well, an outing where he just had to go out there and pitch three innings against the Nationals a handful of days ago. He struck out four. Didn't actually give up a run, but you know, he's got to go out there and soak up some innings. His outing before that, Perk's, not that good. One inning and giving up four runs against the Tigers in a ball game where, again, you were short bullpen arms. Carlos Rodon went six. Tommy Canley and Matt Perk were, in all reality, the only guys that Robin Ventura had available to him that night. So those were the guys that were darn well going to pitch. What James Shields does for you, getting back to the larger scope of this thing, in the last move, or the first move, rather, in this kind of domino end of week and into the weekend that the White Sox have had, James Shields can get you that extra inning every fifth day. And I just mean extra inning relative to, I don't know, I guess the average amount of innings that, that the back three in this rotation, whether it be Latos, Rodon, and Danks / Gonzalez, as he's kind of worked into this rotation as well, that those three have given you, maybe you're getting six now from James Shields. And that adds up over the course of a season. That adds up over the month as innings, as stress that you don't have to place on that bullpen that hopefully leads to better production from those guys because you just don't have to lean on them as much. That's you know, it's kind of a basic tenet of baseball at this point. And when you've got a bullpen that, or when you've got a rotation, rather, that is kind of short like that, at times, as it's been for the first 2 months of the season with the White Sox, you, by giving yourself a little bit more length, you now have better matchups and better options to go to out of the bullpen. So hopefully that trade in and of itself just gives you that one little thing. Now, obviously, that's kind of the okay, we expect this to happen at the very least scenario for the James Shields trade. At best, I mean, it can go to a completely different direction. The guy was throwing in his first, it's 7-8 starts of the season before he'd given up a handful to, I believe it was the Tigers in his last start against the Padres, or for the Padres, a 3 ERA, a guy who had gotten deep into games, a guy who, admittedly, the strikeout rates were a little down and the walks were a little up compared to where he'd been in his career, but the guy knows how to pitch. And I think, you know, whether you've listened to Ed or DJ or Steve or Hawk, and Jason too, but all those guys have kind of pointed out the fact that there is value to a guy who knows what he can do to go attack hitters. And Shields has proven over the course of his career to be exactly that kind of guy, and the White Sox expect him to be that way when his next turn in the rotation comes up, which is, in fact, tomorrow against the Tigers. It's obviously Yordano Ventura and Carlos Rodon this afternoon. Matt Boyd and James Shields are going to be the starters tomorrow evening as the White Sox welcome in the Tigers for three. Interesting in that it's going to be Boyd and Shields on that Monday game. Obviously, those two have not matched up yet this season. Jordan Zimmermann and Miguel Gonzalez are your starters for Tuesday night's ball game, and then Mike Pelfrey goes against Chris Sale again. Matchup of those two same starters that you had last time out in Comerica. Chris Sale and Mike Pelfrey going against each other. That was a ball game that I think the White Sox lineup would like to try again because Mike Pelfrey had not had a good go heading into that game. and he pitched well, but got away with a couple of things. And I would imagine that 1 through 9, and even a handful of the guys who weren't there in Detroit, guys like Tim Anderson or guys like Jason Coates, I suppose, have been or will be told that this is the guy you can go get and glad to have the rematch because vengeance can be yours on that Wednesday night when Chris Sale goes against Mike Pelfrey. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back after the 11:30 news, we'll talk with Nick Hostetler. He's the senior director of scouting. White Sox have finished up their draft. All accounts say it's a pretty good one. Hostetler thinks he got his guys. We'll talk about who he got and what you can expect from some of these young men, perhaps, and I don't mean to drum up the support any more than it needs to be, but some of these guys have reputations or I guess profiles of being able to help the White Sox, perhaps even in 2016. We'll talk with Nick about that coming up next. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Swinging a ground ball to third. Steps on the bag at third to second for two. On the first, triple play. How about that one?
Win White Sox tickets.
Listen to me, John Howell, weekday mornings at 6:50.
Oh, by the way, here's a hint.
Listen to the White Sox postgame show. It helps.
Your 2016 White Sox are on WLS AM 890.
On your home for the White Sox, WLS AM 890.
White Sox baseball. Experience it here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We've got you up until for another hour or so before we start the pregame show. Sox and Royals will get game 3 underway here at U.S. Cellular Field. Nice day at the ballpark. It is a third matchup between Yordano Ventura and Carlos Rodon. A little bit later in the show, we'll talk about the suspension to Ventura, his appeal of it, and maybe what you think about the rules as they were applied in that brawl between the Royals and the Orioles. We are scheduled to be speaking with Nick Hostetler, scouting director of the White Sox. Should be with us in a couple of minutes here. Going to talk about the MLB draft and what the White Sox got and how proud they are of what they got. And really, and I know this is just kind of a feather in the cap, and it's nice to hear, I suppose, but the outside evaluations of the White Sox crop of draft picks is pretty great. Pretty great up and down the board. In fact, we've got Nick Hostetler here on the line with us, the scouting director for the Chicago White Sox, a busy man here the last handful of days, and a kind gentleman to be sure to be coming on with us and talking a little White Sox draft. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Really appreciate you stopping by. It is the hopefully we are the end of your whirlwind media tour, and then you can go back to your family and maybe catch some sleep or something like that. But it's been a busy, and I would imagine pretty terrific last handful of days for you. I know this is your first in this position with an MLB draft, but not by any means your first draft. How did this one for you compare differently to drafts prior?
Yeah, it was different. I mean, it's always when you're in the lead chair, it always takes a different feel. It always takes a different I don't want to use the word pressure, but a little bit of a different sense of urgency when you're sitting there, and it definitely has a different feel and a different tone to it. But at the same time, it was a fun process, and I know that for me and the rest of our staff, I know as well, we absolutely enjoyed it, and we're excited as can be with how the outcome was.
So I'm curious, Nick Hostetler here, our scouting director of the White Sox, and I'm sure if you're a White Sox fan and listening to the show, you've heard his voice over the last handful of days. It's become familiar to you. I wonder this, Nick, and as a guy who has really only drafted on MLB The Show on PlayStation, I can tell you that, you know, you can, we talk about, and you've talked about it too, you seem to have had a target with that 10th pick in Zach Collins, a catcher out of Miami, a kid that's going to really profile as well as a good bat, a guy who knows the strike zone too, which excites me. But what I wonder is, as a guy in that room, a scouting director like that, And the way that kind of the story has been built, that, you know, you really kind of pressed on Zach Collins, you wanted this guy. When you target someone like that, what if he go? You know, I'm sure there are backups and there are other players that you liked at 10, but where does that process go if you don't get your target? And I'm sure that happened at points later on in the draft.
It did. And we were prepared, if Zach wasn't there, to go on to our second, even third options at that point. We were pretty confident that our third option would be available. But we did at that point. We kind of when you get in that room and you're there for all hours of the day and night for 10 straight days, you pretty much go over almost any scenario possible. And
sure,
we had everything lined up and ready to go should Zach not be there. And as the day started on Thursday, we kind of had an idea that there was maybe one, possibly two teams in front of us that had reached out to Zach and tried to initiate some conversations with his camp in regards to getting them a deal at their spot. So we started working on ours and had some stuff in place, and we were ready to pull the trigger if Zach was gone. And it actually did happen throughout the draft, where we were picked a couple times right as we were getting ready to pick. And you just go on to the next guy. You got to have your backup stuff ready and make sure you're prepared and organized. And when you are that, the panic doesn't set in at that point.
I'm sure you're busy during the draft. I mean, I'm sure there's not a whole lot. Well, I don't know. You tell me whether there's a lot of communication between other clubs. But anybody who's been in a fantasy draft before knows that if you get sniped, there's a lot of table talk. There's a lot of arguing. Yeah. There's a lot of angry.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if at points during this next week here, you're going to be able to get on the horn with somebody who maybe sniped you or somebody that you guys sniped, and you're going to hear some guff one way or the other.
You actually, every now and then there'll be some text messages or go back and forth between guys that, you got me on that one, or great pick, or, you know, things like that. I've always said it's always really nice to be on the receiving end of those, because your decision, validates your decision. You're like, okay, somebody else is going to take him to this the right spot. But it's really, really, some sour grapes when you're sending those texts out.
Yeah. You never want to be on that end. Everybody, if you're being yelled at during a draft, you've probably done something right. I think that's how it works. So let's talk about some of these young men. I like Zach Collins. I've actually mentioned a couple of times to you how much tape I've watched on Zach Birdie and how much I like the kid and the stuff he brings. Just with those two top guys, I know there's been a lot of conversation about them. So maybe briefly, these two guys are advanced for their age levels, for their competition level, and for their specific jobs. I wonder if you can talk to the immediate future for Zach and Zach.
Yeah, I think that one of them is just getting them through healthy through the rest of their college season. I actually just watched Zach Collins' first AB walk against Boston College in Game 3, and I know that Louisville got beat last night. So, you know, getting them through that first, the rest of their college season, and we really do truly hope they go on to Omaha and win a championship there, because that just brings a winning pedigree into our system. But, you know, I think for both of them, once we get them signed and in on campus, physicals and everything's finished, I think both of them are on somewhat of an accelerated path, although differently between the two. You know, I would anticipate to see Zach Collins to probably report somewhere to Winston-Salem, Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, and at that level, and you know, just get a chance to get his breath, you know, catch his breath a little bit, because he has been full go. You know, most of these college kids have been full go since January, so it'll give him time to get acclimated a little bit, swing the bat, be comfortable with that. In regards to Zach Birdie, his plan will probably be a little bit different. We have not yet discussed on where to start him. I do think that, you know, obviously with the pitches that he presently has and the stuff that he has, I do think that he can move extremely quick. We all feel that way. And, you know, what we're planning on doing is keeping him in the bullpen the rest of this year, see where that takes him, whether that ends up in Birmingham, Charlotte, or even in Chicago, and then evaluate next spring when it gets to that point on whether or not we're going to keep him in that role or if we're going to try to stretch him out and start him.
So looking down through the draft, too, I'm seeing, Birdie and Alec Hansen, both of those college pitchers. Jimmy Lambert, Bernardo Flores, both college pitchers. Ian Hamilton and Brian Cicito, I think all of those college pitchers. I'm sensing a trend here, Nick, and I know that there were a lot of supposedly, and you tell me if the White Sox had it evaluated differently, but a lot of high school arms that had some talent and some upside in this draft. You guys went with college arms. the White Sox have a fantastic reputation of developing arms in their system and getting the right guys. I would imagine that you even have calls or maybe coaches that are looking at players and saying, hey, this White Sox club isn't a bad one to get drafted by.
There's no question. And the way that the draft just kind of fell to us, the college arm was the best value at that point in the draft. And, you know, we never want to press just because a guy comes from a certain demographic. So what we do is we just look at the best player available. And there were a couple times where a high school pitcher was actually in our mix and was getting close to our pick and either just didn't fit with us financially or was picked in front of us. So those options were available. But in regards to the organization reputation and the pitching, I can't speak highly enough for what Kurt Hassler, Buddy Bell, Nick Capra, Kirk Champion, and then into Don Cooper does with our pitchers. The track record speaks for itself. And when you got guys like Daniel Hudson and you got guys like Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon and agents, players, even coaches from these colleges want their kids coming to us because of that reputation. We're not going to waste their bullets in the bullpen, so to speak, or sitting in Double A. We're not going to just let them sit down there and just throw and throw and throw. If they're good enough to pitch, we're going to run them through the system and get them up to Chicago. And there was a certain instance in this draft where an agent did that. He called us, and we had mutual interest on both sides. And we said, let's find a way to get this thing done because they want their player with us. So it makes my job a lot easier for the great job that those guys do. And it showed in this draft.
I would imagine that helps signability to a point as well.
There's no question. They're in that same situation. I know the player turned down less money to take an option with us to have that ability to move quick and know that, you know, we hold the numbers show that we keep our pitchers healthy, and that's so big for the players, the agents, the families, everything in their camp.
That is big. White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler hanging out with us here on White Sox Weekly, talking about this just wrapped Major League draft. Five catchers, unless I've miscounted one of the C's on here on my press release, five catchers taken by the White Sox in this year's draft. Obviously, one overall was a catcher as well in Zach Collins. I always feel like it's tough to evaluate, or it has to be tough to evaluate, whether a guy can stay at catcher, especially when you're, you know, talking about an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old. It's just you never know what a guy's body or athleticism is going to do on him. And I would imagine, too, you know, for a lot of these guys, you know, they're playing three times a week, four times a week in college or high school, and now all of a sudden it's, hi, welcome to the minor leagues. You're not only, you know, playing every day, but we're also going to stuff you on a bus and put your knees in your throat for 3 hours on the way home and on the way there. How is that? You know, because we talk about pitchers all the time and, you know, pitching on that five-day rest instead of, you know, pitching just the Friday game or whatever. For catchers, you got to extend these guys physically too.
They are. They're extended physically. And at the same time, you know, these catchers aren't used to catching guys with plus-plus stuff every day. And now coming to the professional level, they're finally also calling their own games. And that for me, I can't. I'm not sure if there's one thing that drives me more crazy watching a college game than the catcher having to turn to the dugout to look for the pitch call.
Right.
So we have to teach these kids how to call games a lot of times. And now the mental part of it comes in, and just the mental exhaustion of trying to. I mean, these guys are dialed in for 150 to 160 pitches a game on the defensive end, and then they've also got to take that to the offensive part of it for their game and their at-bats. So these guys really are, they get run down both physically and mentally. So there's a lot of, we carry extra catchers just for that situation. That's one of the things that's made high school catching so hard to adjust to the professional game, just because that's really hard to ask a 21-year-old, a 25-year-old, let alone an 18-year-old. So it is really difficult for those type of guys. And if we did take five, I think we're going to end up signing three of them, the first three we took. And we were pretty happy with all three of those. We think that that definitely two of the three are going to stay behind the plate, and Zach Collins and Nate Nolan. Nate's a plus-plus defender with a plus arm. And then Michael Hickman has a chance as well. I think he also is going to play a little bit of first base as well. He's a little bit more of a bat-first guy. But with those three guys, we feel comfortable that at least two of the three, the first two, are going to stay behind the plate, and the third one has a chance as well.
Looking around, seeing where some of these guys came out of, some of the draft picks here. Zach Remillard, a third baseman out of Coastal Carolina. I think you've got another Chanticleer, Mike Morrison, a right-hander out of Coastal Carolina. I worked in the Carolina League for one season. It was in Myrtle Beach, and it was kind of as that Coastal team was really coming up. They had a real tough fight against the University of Miami in the first round of the regional, I guess. And it was fun to watch that club as it kind of was, you know, becoming a thing. You can get some serious talent out of Coastal Carolina these days. It's really become a, I don't want to say a hotbed, but certainly a place you got to go scout.
Yeah, I think we went to the well there three of the last 4 years with Jacob May, Casey Schroeder, and then with Zach Remillard and the right-hander we got later in the day yesterday. So, and actually both him and Remillard played last night against LSU, and both had very good games. I think Remillard hit a home run, and
he did. So yeah, I watched him that game.
Yeah, so we were those guys really go out. They play hard. They're good, solid makeup kids. The coaching staff there at Coastal does a terrific job recruiting a certain type of player. These guys are all gritty, grindy guys. None of them are the, you know, we don't have to worry about any of them coming out with a bad toenail or something. I mean, it's they're going
right.
to fight through. They're going to fight through some stuff. They're just tough kids, and I think getting those guys in your system are important.
We talked, I think it was last week, you were headed up to Wisconsin, somewhere in Kenosha, to scout a shortstop. Got him in the 39th round, I see, out of Tremper. I'm a Bradford guy myself, but Tremper's fine, I suppose. Justin Levy, an 18-year-old shortstop. Actually, a couple of very young and looks like college shortstops in this draft. It was Bossard and Levy and Roman, this Bossard kid could be a player too.
Hey, he could be a player. Now his, you know what? It was a pretty cool situation for us that we had Roger up in our draft room, and so he could listen in. He didn't know we were doing it, and it was something, you know. And I spoke of this yesterday to some of the print media that, you know, a lot of times some of the fans and some of the people on the outside don't quite understand what we try to do with those drafts. Some of the families that have some of the kids that their families work with us or we work around. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard, and I experience it myself with my kids. And my son had a game yesterday that I missed, and missed a lot of my daughter's volleyball games. And, you know, those kids go without their dad or their uncle or whoever it may be, not being able to have them around all the time and not being able to have them at games. And our travel schedules are so crazy. So it's an opportunity for us to just extend a little bit of a thank you to that kid of understanding that, hey, we really appreciate you loaning your dad or your uncle or whoever it may be to us, why we try to put together the best organization here in Chicago. So it's just a little bit of a thank you to them, and understand that they're part of this family too. So I always love doing it for some guys. We took Mike Shirley, our Midwest Regional scout, his son as well. And you know, and it's just a little bit of, hey, you know, I really appreciate you loaning me your father for 6-8 months as he helps us get better.
Well, it makes the makeup check a little easier, too, for you
Absolutely.
Guys.
Absolutely. No question.
You've got the phone number of the family member, so it's not tough to reach out. Nick, really appreciate you stopping by. I know you've been through an absolute whirlwind here, but for what it's worth, the outside publications, the nerderies that get together and rate these prospects, and I read them all. I'm a nerd myself, but everybody's come back aces on a lot of these picks. Everybody really likes the top three. And congrats, because that doesn't happen by accident.
Connor, I really appreciate it. I know I can't say enough about our staff, our support system that we have with the front office, and Rick and Buddy, Kenny and Jeremy, and Dan Fabian, Dan Stripman, all the guys that really just, I mean, they really truly put their lives on hold to make this thing successful. And, you know, we set out with a plan back in August when I met with Rick and Kenny on this, and we set out with a plan to get ourselves a lot of really good, solid baseball players that get on base, guys that throw strikes, and some high-end pitching that become frontline guys. And I am very excited to say that there's no question in my mind and our minds and the organization that we did that.
Appreciate you hopping on, and congrats to you. That's a great feeling to have after you wrap up the 2016 draft.
Thanks, Connor. I really appreciate it.
Nick Hostetler, White Sox Director of Scouting, joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Appreciate him stopping by. You've heard him all over the place, and he's wrapped up his media requirements. White Sox Weekly, I'm sure the crown, or the jewel in the crown, I suppose, for his for the media appearances here. You've heard him all over, and this draft really is, it looks like a solid one, specifically at the top for the White Sox with Zach Collins, Zach Birdie, and Alec Hansen. Out of Miami, Louisville, and Oklahoma, respectively. Those three guys were rated very highly, and the White Sox knew that, and it's been written about, been talked about, we've talked about it too here, leading into the season, opening things up, that with three picks in the top 49 and a farm system that had a couple of real good guys at the top, and Carson Fulmer, Tim Anderson, who's now playing shortstop at the major league level, and a guy like Spencer Adams, who's making short work of some of the minor league systems there, or some of the double-A hitters, I should say, that it's got some top-heavy stuff. But being able to fill that out with three picks in the top 49, knowing that you were going to be able to balance out that farm system some with solid picks throughout, it looks like things are going in the right direction with this 2016 draft. And Nick Hostetler is a big part of that. And obviously, you know, you heard him mention the guys in development, the area scouts, the cross-checkers, all those guys. They are crucial to a ball club success, not just in a minor league farm sense, but on the major league level. You got to have all cogs working, and that's exactly where the White Sox are headed at this point. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We've kind of begun our dive into the last handful of roster moves, of shakeups, of changes to this White Sox roster as they look to maximize production here in the 2016 season. At 31-31, 3.5 games out behind the Indians in the AL Central, certainly in a competable spot. There's no doubt about it, and they look to get above, one game above 500 this afternoon with Carlos Rodon and Yordano Ventura taking their respective spots in the rotation for the Sox and Royals this afternoon. We're walking you up to the pregame show and first pitch. We'll have it all for you in a little bit here. You got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Today, the White Sox versus Royals. First pitch at 1:10.
On your home for White Sox baseball, WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Coming up on the noon hour, at which point we will be just a little over 30 minutes from the beginning of the pregame show for White Sox and Royals this afternoon at U.S. Cellular Field. It is a 1:10 first pitch, and it features Yordano Ventura and Carlos Rodon. I almost said they'll be the pugilists for today's matchup. I suppose that might be true in Yordano Ventura's case. He is facing a 9-game suspension for plunking and then using his face to stop Manny Machado's fist in a ball game on Tuesday. Ill-advised strategy when you're getting into a tussle, but Yordano went for it. I got to tell you, his face wore most of the brunt of that impact. Those two will start. MLB.tv Premium, by the way, is the number one live streaming sports service, and it delivers everything you've come to expect and more. Watch every out-of-market game in live HD on over 400 supported devices. It includes a free subscription to At-Bat Premium. It's the number one app for live baseball. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details. I love the thing. I moved to a new place at the rooftop deck for the first time in my Chicago living experience. The Wi-Fi reaches up to the rooftop deck, which that's just pure luck. But I can watch on MLB.tv from, you know, the iPad or whatever it is, any ball game that I want to watch, and it is absolutely fantastic. Just up there with the weather we've had, sure, a little hot, no doubt, and I don't want to, you know, want to sweat all over your device, but awesome to have that ability to go up there and watch baseball wherever you want to watch baseball. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here. Worked through the or talked a little bit about the first transaction of this past week, June 5th, the acquisition of James Shields. Next up was the White Sox designating Matt Latos for assignment and signing Justin Morneau, former MVP and batting title champion from 2 years ago in the National League. So we'll hear a little bit from Justin as he signed on with the White Sox, something that I don't think he ever expected to do, But here he is, chance to win some ball games and a chance to play for what used to be an AL Central rival for him. That's all next. You've got WLS AM 890.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out, is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. We are inching closer and closer to the beginning of the pregame show for the Sox and Royals here at U.S. Cellular Field. It's Avi Garcia's birthday, apparently. Happy birthday to Avi Garcia. He's in the lineup today, and hopefully he rewards himself or gets himself a birthday gift of dingers and taters, both, that just leave the yard in tremendous fashion this afternoon. White Sox looking for a win, hunting for one against Yordano Ventura and the Royals today. Avi can contribute there. Got done talking with White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler about the advancements, that's a bad word to use, about the additions to the White Sox farm system through the Major League Draft this year. It's been highly touted. There are also discussions that we've been having, 312-591-8900, if you want to hop in on them, about the additions and the changes that the White Sox have made to the roster, kind of working through them one by one. It is White Sox Weekly, after all, so we're taking a look at the week that was for the White Sox. June 5th, they acquired James Shields, went through that transaction. June 9th, just 4 days later, another big transaction is a guy who was in the rotation to start the season was designated for assignment in Matt Latos. And I think White Sox fans will remember pretty obviously that the first four starts for Latos were fantastic, absolutely fantastic. He'd gotten away with a couple of things. He'd been hit a bit, but able to limit the damage. And credit him for that. I think what Matt Latos was able to do with establishing the curveball on the outer half, particularly to left-handers, was able to neutralize a lot of power that otherwise you saw against him in the last seven. Speaking of those last seven starts for Latos with the White Sox, they weren't good. And unfortunately for Matt and for the Sox, the strikeout-to-walk rate just wasn't there. He had struck out 19 in those seven starts and walked 18. ERA was hovering at 7.5, and he wasn't getting deep into starts. And we talked a lot when we mentioned the James Shields trade that the expectation there and the established skill set that he's got is to go deep into ball games, and that alleviates a lot of other problems that a club can incur otherwise by having shorter starts. So Shields, an obvious strength that Shields brings to this White Sox club as he's been picked up from the Padres. Also on that day, when Matt Latos was designated for assignment, the White Sox announced that they'd reached terms on a one-year deal with former AL MVP and former NL batting title champion Justin Morneau. Now, I like Justin Morneau. I have for a while. I understand that's not a popular setting for White Sox fans, as he was an absolute terror in the American League Central from just about the moment he came up to the bigs in 2003 all the way through 2011 and 2012. Now, obviously, he had dealt with concussion problems, had Morneau, and those are seemingly manageable for him at this point in his career. And I think, what's also fairly interesting here is, you look at the late career for Justin, his work in Pittsburgh, his work in Colorado in 2014, where he put together a slash line of .319, which led the National League, .364 on base percentage, which is just dandy, and on his way to slugging .496, which isn't terrible by any means. It's that's not a bad run at all. In fact, he slugged .559 when he won the AL MVP in 2006. .496, obviously there's a disparity between those two, but a very good season. Now, a lot of people have asked, well, Connor, what about the splits? What about away from at Coors Field and away from Coors Field? And it's a good question. It's a valid one. There's no doubt about it. But for Morneau, in 2014, those splits were actually pretty manageable and actually really reasonable. At home, the numbers were 327 batting average, a 363 on base, and a 515 slug. Away from Coors Field, 309 batting average, a 364 on base, a difference of only a point, essentially the exact same, which is a skill that, you know, we talk about these old man skills in baseball, the ability to recognize pitches and control the strike zone while you're at the plate. That's a nice number to have. And the slugging was understandably down, 475. Still, that's not, you know, from 515 to 475, you go, all right, I understand that Coors Field does things to baseballs that other ballparks don't. 475, though, is, well, still putting a decent swing on the ball, even when he's not in Colorado. Morneau had vowed to never be a White Sox before, and the game does funny things as you go through it. And I fault him absolutely 0 points for saying what he said, when he said it, because of what team he was playing on and how heated those battles were between the Sox and Twins. My God, they were good. And if the Sox didn't come out on the right time, on the right side all the time, they certainly did in 2005. And he acknowledged that in an interview with reporters as he sat down in U.S. Cellular Field, ready to begin his Sox career. Hopefully, some point after the trade, after the All-Star break. So take a listen. Here's Justin Morneau getting indoctrinated to the White Sox press corps.
It's been in the works for a couple weeks, but for it to work out You know, if you would have told me a few years ago this is where I'd end up or have an opportunity to play, I don't know if I would have believed you, but I'm thankful for it now and happy that I'm here and hopefully be back sooner than later to help this team try and get back into a playoff spot. But that's really what I'm here for. So.
After going through the surgery, what do you think? What do you expect? What do you have left?
Well, we'll find out, I think. But you know, I wouldn't come back if I didn't feel like I was here to contribute and you know, be a part of this lineup and you know, help out in any way I can. But also, you know, try and drive in runs and do things to help win ball games. You know, I have still have a desire to compete, and I still have a fire to go out there and prove every day that I belong on the field and try and win. And you know, in the end, really, that's all. All there is left for me is just try and win and be a part of a winning environment or a winning situation and in a playoff chase and play meaningful games in September. That's really what makes it fun to come to the ballpark, and I still have a desire to do that.
How close do you feel to getting back on the field and being ready to contribute?
Well, I knew we were going to be asked this question, but it's somewhere around the All-Star break, probably on the backside of the All-Star break, but started swinging, taking dry swings, and everything's progressing as it should be, and keep passing those steps as we go. But it's been it's reacted better than I thought it was going to after having the surgery, and happy with the way things have gone so far. So
you touched on it a little bit. Never imagine all the feisty games you played against this franchise. They were as intense as any games maybe that he played outside of playoffs, right? I mean,
yeah, we had a great rivalry here. It was two teams that were very good. They, you know, were lucky enough to, or good enough to win the World Series in 05, and you know, we thought we had a team that was good enough in 06, but the games we played and the battles between the fans, and you see with all the sports, you know, you get the Bears and the Vikings, you get the Blackhawks and the Wild, and you know, they're so close to each other that I think those rivalries kind of carry over, and I was part of that, and now I'm on the other side of it, and you know, I'm looking forward to doing that again. But you know, being here, it was a little different walking in and usually just walk past that home clubhouse, but to be able to walk in here and be on this side of it, it's new and it's exciting.
You're a Blackhawks fan?
I wouldn't go that far.
Now, walking into this clubhouse, this team is known to have a couple characters. I mean, have you felt the energy walking in here?
Yeah, there's, you know, I've played against, I think, pretty much everybody in there, and to come in and be a part of a veteran team and guys that have been around, guys who know how to play the game, it's fun. I've known Laurie, who's, I'm sure, one of the characters you're talking about, but known him, fellow Canadian, so excited to get a chance to play with him again, play with him when he was very young in the World Baseball Classic, and just seeing these guys every day, how they prepare. I think you can learn something every day you come in, and being around guys that have had success and just trying to fit in with those guys, I'm looking forward to it.
That's Justin Morneau of the White Sox. It does feel a little bit weird to say that Justin Morneau is a White Sox, a member of the White Sox organization, and after having played with the Twins for so long, even still, hopefully he can help this ball club. I think he can erase some of the bad memories maybe that you've got with some productive efforts in later July and August and September for this club. He certainly wants to help that case, and the hope is that he's able and ready to roll after the All-Star break. He's rehabbing from elbow surgery. I actually saw him taking ground balls out at first base yesterday. Looks good. Always been able to man first base pretty well. We're going to hit the break real quickly. When we come back, we'll bring you Robin Ventura's comments from this afternoon, talking a little bit about the today's starter, Carlos Rodon, after skipping his last start. We also have the week in review from White Sox baseball. That's all next on WLS AM 890.
Passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox lay here. WLS AM 890.
This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. Carlos Rodon returns to the rotation this afternoon. He missed his last start with a little bit of trouble in his neck, but radiated, I suppose, down to his bicep. Things have checked out. He seems ready to roll and make his start this afternoon. Robin Ventura spoke with reporters this morning in advance of the coming ball game, and a lot of the conversation concerned Carlos, and I figured that's where we'd start today. Here's Robin.
In the past, we've had trouble, like, you know, a few years ago with Cleveland. You know, we just couldn't seem to figure out that way to beat them. And, you know, I think with these guys, you know, we played well. I think we've scored better as of late playing against these guys. You know, even in Kansas City, I mean, that was, we had leads late. We couldn't hold them. That's different than just losing 11-1 all the time.
Rodon Ventura's a guy who's had some incidents lately. How do you approach facing a pitcher who is...
Well, we've faced him. It's not like we haven't seen him before.
Right.
So we've had our own with him. So you just continue to play, and that's a side issue that we're trying to win games. I think that's the biggest thing for us, is that we're focusing our concentrations more on trying to get some runs on the board, whether what he's doing out there.
What would a good outing for Carlos mean for his confidence right now?
I mean, it would be big for him. Just, you know, I think the way he was feeling last week, to be able to come out and, you know, get deep into a game and have it be, you know, controlled and things like that, I think is important for him. But, you know, he wants to win a game. And I think that's always going to be his biggest thing, is to be able to put us in a position to win it.
I'm sorry if you talked about this a couple days. Is there any limitations on him, any in terms of pitch count?
Not really a pitch count, but I think how he goes through the game. You know, if it's a struggle, you know, that's probably a little bit different. You know, I think high-stress situation, innings and things like that will be different than, you know, him just being at a high pitch count.
So you might be more inclined to pull him in a situation where you might let him work out of it normally.
Right.
Was it a pinched nerve or...?
No, he was just sore. I think that's just part of, you know, what pitchers have, and I think his was a little bit more that, you know, we're concerned about. Anytime somebody says something like that, you're concerned about it. But after getting checked out, everything was fine.
Ned said yesterday that he believes this division is four teams all the way. He just thinks that, you know, there's no separation in his mind. You view the division kind of the same way, as a dogfight?
Well, it's I mean, even teams that are really good, it usually goes down to the last week anyway. So, I think the way the division is, every game seemed close. Stuff like that, you realize you get caught up in right now, which you realize at the end of the year. But at the end of the year, you're figuring that all these teams are going to have a chance to get hot and be able to do something.
That's the manager, Robin Ventura, here on White Sox Weekly, talking a little bit. I think the best news is that that Carlos Rodon is healthy and ready to make this start. The White Sox focused on him being a big part of this rotation. And he can still do that. He's got a world of talent. I think, you know, what has been maybe the biggest part of the struggle for him is finding the put this the right way, finding the way to pitch most comfortably, finding the way that he's most comfortable on the mound attacking hitters. Maybe that's the best way to put it. And he's been searching for that and certainly found it a couple of times this season. And hopefully he can get it again against the Royals. Actually, he's had fairly decent numbers against the Royals in a handful of starts, an ERA under 3. We've got the weekend review of the White Sox baseball coming up, of the White Sox having played baseball the last week. Here on White Sox Weekly, kind of a theme. We go week by week. Also talked about each of the additions to this roster. Didn't mention the Tim Anderson ones, so I'll briefly sum it up here. Timmy is here to play. That's what I've heard from Robin and Rick and anybody else with this White Sox organization when asked about bringing Tim Anderson up to the big leagues. He's here to play. He's here to contribute. He's not a savior for this ball club, but is the highest ranked positional prospect for this team. He can certainly do some damage. And the decision to designate Jimmy Rollins was not an easy one. He has provided a lot for this ball club on and off the field. And in an unfortunate way, it's kind of time to turn over to the young part of this organization and see what you've got in Tim Anderson and see if he can't provide a spark to the lineup. He did in his first game. Second one didn't go quite as well. You play every day, and he's looking to have a continued approach that garners him some success. Without any further ado, we will wrap up White Sox Weekly this way, the way we should, the way we ought to, the way we always do. Here it is, your week in review.
I think he's just finding his way back. There's the 0-1 from Verlander. Swinging a long one to center. This is tagged at the wall. Gone for a home run. He's hit a home run. His seventh, and the Sox lead 1-0. Tomahawk over 420. Swinging a long one. Left center field. Tomahawk to the flagpole. It's gone. He's hit his 18th. The 0-1 is swinging a ground ball headed to right. Diving Laurie from the rim of the infield. Throws, got him. Hang a star on it. 3-0 to Tom. Swinging a long one. Center field. Is it well at the track? At the wall. Gone. Two-run homer. Light it up. The 1-2 pitch. Inside corner. Strike 3. Got him. So his first out for Shields in a White Sox uniform. A cold third strike on center fielder Ben Revere.
That's filthy.
And the 2-2 to Zimmerman. Tap past the mound. Tough play. Virgil pick it up. Bare hand. Throws. Got him. Nicely done. Hang a star on it.
Zeller steals to Brett Laurie.
Line drive left field. That'll go down the line. Fair ball. Hope Cabrera. Laurie streaks for second. He's got two in the bag. 3-0 White Sox.
Robertson will look at first and glance at third. Here's a swing and a long one. Left center field. Cabrera back.
Banks the catch. Sox win. Sox win. The losing streak ends.
Here's the 1-2 pitch to Tim. A swing and a ground ball over the bag at third.
His first major league hit. It's a double to the corner and left.
Hey.
Nice going, Tim.
This game's never found its mark, man.
Yeah, that's a fact, Frank. Tim Anderson.
Standing ovation for Tim Anderson.
89.
Swinging a long one to right. This is hammered on the line. Line drive home run. He's hit his second. Light it up. They do add two more. 7-3 Sox.
Connor with a 3-2. Fastball down the middle. Strike 3 called. He's got 10 strikeouts. Swinging a ground ball headed into right in the outfield. Corey has it. Hang a star. And it made it look easy, Darren. That was far from being an easy play. He went to the ball, caught it sideways, and then turned his torso around and threw the ball to first base to get him.
That's your week in review for White Sox baseball. Sox looking to get back over that 500 mark at 32-31 with a win this afternoon. Sox fans, join us on Sunday, June 26th at 1:10 p.m. as your Sox take on the Toronto Blue Jays. Also, the first 5,000 girls ages 12 and under will receive a doll-sized White Sox T-shirt presented by American Girl. For tickets, call 866-SOX-GAME or visit WhiteSox.com. Also, Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola at U.S. Cellular Field feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level and $15 in the lower level. And special kid-focused activities are going on throughout the ballpark. Plus, parking is available for only $10. Visit WhiteSox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. I want to thank you for stopping by and listening on your way into the ballpark. Sox and Royals setting up here for a 1:10 first pitch. We'll send it to news, and then you'll have the start of the pregame show. We'll get you all the particulars for this game between the Sox and Royals today. Thanks to Nick Hosteller, the scouting director of the White Sox, for joining us here on White Sox. White Sox Weekly. Thanks to you for calling, texting. Most of all, thanks for listening. You've got WLS AM 890 with the Sox coming up in just a minute.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly and listen to White Sox baseball right here. WLS AM 890.